This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and it is Monday with the mayor. We have Acting Mayor Kim Janey on the line. Mayor Janey, welcome back to Radio Boston, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you, and I understand you are taking calls. So listeners, do you live or work in Boston? Do you have a question for Mayor Janey? Call us 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. So Mayor Janey, before we begin, I wonder if anybody knows what it's like to be in your shoes right now or in the last few weeks. How are you?
I am doing well. I am continuing my focus on the people of Boston. As mayor of this city, this great city, we are still dealing with a global pandemic and a number of challenges facing Boston, as well as so many other cities and towns across our Commonwealth and country, and my priority continues to be with the people.
So you're here as acting mayor, one who's been serving since March, whose tenure will end in November. Last couple of times you were here as a candidate, and we'll get to that later because I do want to talk about the transition. But right now, I want to start with the mayoralty and some news of the day on COVID, because Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine, the company has said that it's safe and effective in clinical trials for kids ages 5 to 12. They're going to seek federal emergency use authorization. How important is that to the safety and the well-being, both physically and overall, of the people of Boston?
Well, it's a huge milestone, but to caution folks, we're still not there yet. This is just the trial results, and so we still need FDA approval to move forward with that. But I'm very hopeful that we will get there, and we will roll out a plan so that we can get our youngest children vaccinated. It is critically important, as we have children in our schools who are not even eligible for the vaccine. And so now that we will hopefully very soon be able to reach out to them and target them and their families, we will do so. The vaccine, I will continue to stress, is the most effective tool to fighting COVID. And we can see it when we look at who is in the hospital, who has died from COVID. It's very clear. It's unvaccinated folks. And so we have to do everything we can to get everyone in our city the life-saving vaccine.
So right now, that vaccine is not mandated in Boston public schools. And as you noted, a lot of kids not eligible. But we hope they will become eligible. And as that is the case, do you anticipate that there might be a time where there's a vaccine mandate for students?
There may be, you know, that would be, again, left to the Department of Education. That would be left to folks at the state, at the federal level. Right now, we are doing all we can to keep our kids safe, and that has meant a testing protocol. That's meant investment in HVAC. That has been the first in the Commonwealth to implement a mask mandate for our schools. And as you may know, we are in the first day for vaccine verification for our city workers, and our school staff are in that first cohort.
Yeah, how's that going? Have you heard?
It's good. It's encouraging. Well, we still have till the end of the day for folks to verify their vaccination status, but the numbers have been growing throughout the day, so that's encouraging. We know that many folks who are in this, and I should mention who they are, it's our schools, it is our libraries, it's Age Strong, it's the Disability Commission, and it is BCYF. Those are the first five that have to upload their vaccine verification status or be subjected to weekly testing.
If they don't upload that status today, just the nuts and bolts of this a little bit, because we're on the front end of this now. How long do they have to submit that negative test? Does that have to have been submitted today as well?
No, that will be a week. So they have a week to do that when they'll start that. But the goal is to get everyone to upload their vaccination, that they are fully vaccinated. And so that's what we hope to see. But those who choose not to, we'll have to go through weekly testing. And those who refuse weekly testing will be put on unpaid administrative leave.
We have a lot of questions for Mayor Kim Janey. What are yours? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So staying on education and COVID for a minute, the Massachusetts Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, or DESE, released its first COVID case report of the year last week. The data show that Boston, Worcester, and Springfield schools logged the highest number of staff cases, with 8 each. Are you thinking that with this new policy in place, are you expecting to see that number come down, and how quickly?
Well, we want to get everyone vaccinated. We want to get our school staff. We want to get children who are eligible to receive the vaccine, vaccinated, their families. It's why we've had, as part of our back-to-school work, linking up with mobile vaccination clinics. Many of the back-to-school events had these clinics right there so that people could choose to get vaccinated. We know, though, there will be cases in schools, and that is why there is a testing policy that involves CIC Health and Boston Medical Center to make sure that we can isolate any cases, support that student or adult who may test positive while they are away, certainly test and stay for other school children so that they can continue their learning. We know that this year and a half has been so difficult for our children in particular and their families, that there is learning loss that happened, you know, despite everyone working hard with remote learning. That can never take the place of children being in the classroom with their teachers, with their peers. And so we cannot continue down that road. We know we've got to have school children back in the classroom to make up for that lost time and get them on the road to academic success.
So I want to pick up on that for a minute and talk about school buses. Governor Baker has activated the National Guard to provide drivers to districts that need it. About 120 drivers were trained as of last week, and we've got districts from Chelsea, Revere, Quincy, Lowell, Worcester that have accepted help. Boston is not taking that offer. Why?
Well, I mean, it's we have done pretty good thus far. I'm really proud that today we're at 90%. On Friday we were at 90%. We've had the best on our very first day. We beat the five-year average, and we did that in a pandemic. We did that on a rainy school day. We've been doing the work to make sure that every single bus route is covered. And so if there are other districts that need more support, they should certainly get that. If we get to the point where we need more support because we're, you know, continue to lack drivers, or, you know, God forbid, drivers test positive for COVID or anything, we certainly want to take advantage of any help that is out there. But we've have done a great job in getting on-time arrival in terms of students getting to school, as well as that first day of attendance. We broke the record.
How do you get the other 10%? And listen, I recognize, I mean, on day one it was 57%, the day two, 81%. Now you're at 90. I know, you know, from preparing for previous conversations, that that's not bad in comparison to pre-COVID. But how do you get the other 10%?
Well, they're you know, will continue to be a challenge given the shortage, which is why we are doing everything to make sure that the routes are covered, that we have backup drivers. We want always to get all of our kids to school on time. And we know in a city like Boston with old roads and lots of traffic that that can be a challenge. And so, you know, this means that we've got to focus on other things, not just our school buses, but traffic flow throughout our city, and making sure that we have the infrastructure in place for multimodal transportation. That means dedicated bus lanes. That means looking at dedicated bus lanes for our school buses, not just our public transportation buses. All of those things are on the table for how we can continue to improve our on-time arrival and ensure that all of our kids can maximize their time in the classroom with their teachers.
Let's talk about housing for a little bit, and I'm focused on the eviction moratorium that you put in place last month. There's been, you know, pushback from developers and landlord groups like the Small Property Owners Association. Do you believe and do you hope that Boston's next mayor will continue the policy? And is there anything that you want to do now to ensure that that policy continues?
Well, it certainly needs to continue for the foreseeable future as we continue to battle this pandemic. And we see this economic downturn. When it comes to those who need extra help in paying their rent, that is what the Rental Relief Fund is for. So when I first came into office, I invested $50 million in this fund. This fund goes to support not just tenants but landlords alike who could take advantage of this fund. We've been able to help 3,400 families stay in their homes, so we've had a lot of success there. More than that, we've got a foreclosure prevention fund, because it's not just tenants who are having a difficult time. There are people who own their homes who are having a difficult time. And so we want to do everything we can to keep people in their homes and make sure that Boston is a place where if people want to come and put down roots, they're able to do that. It's why the housing agenda also quadrupled the down payment assistance for first-time homebuyers, taking that from $10,000 to $40,000. So the housing agenda is more than an eviction moratorium, but I would suggest to the next mayor of Boston that this eviction moratorium should be in place till the end of the calendar year for sure.
I think about the numbers that you've just given, and they're important, and yet we also know the size and the magnitude of the challenge around housing, especially affordable housing, you know, addressing gentrification, making sure that generations of families, as you did, can, right, grow up and then live in the same neighborhood. Is there anything else that you feel a sense of urgency to put in place during the remainder of your term to try to address what feels like one of the gnarliest issues facing the city right now?
Yeah, I think home ownership is something that we really have to look at, particularly as it relates to communities of color, specifically the Black and Latino community. Communities that have historically been left out need a real opportunity to break the cycle of poverty and build generational wealth in the city. When we think about the racial wealth gap here in the city of Boston, we know that wealth is created through ownership, whether business ownership or home ownership. And so much more needs to be done around ownership in Boston. And, you know, we have planted some good seeds and laid the groundwork for some of that with the down payment assistance that I just talked about, taking that from $10,000 to $40,000. But there's also real opportunity with the ARP funding to look at this issue with other monies that are coming, and then just through policy. And so we will continue over these next 2 months to again prioritize the people of Boston during my tenure as mayor, and I would encourage the next mayor to lift this up as well. Home ownership is going to be critically important in stabilizing our city and dealing with the wealth gap and making sure that the people who want to call Boston home can do so for generations to come.
1-800-423-8255 to join this conversation. I was going to do this a little later in this discussion, Mayor Janey, but because you just emphasized the racial wealth gap, because you talked about the populations in Boston who are most vulnerable on housing, who are most behind compared to white Bostonians in terms of wealth and assets, we are in this moment where we had three Black candidates running for mayor. You're the first Black leader in the mayor's seat in Boston. And we're now going forward with two candidates who are not Black and are going to need to make a case to our Black and brown communities about hearing their issues, about being responsive to their needs, being present in the neighborhoods. They're both women of color, but how are you thinking about that today?
Well, again, my priority is to look to the people of Boston to make sure that they're okay. And so for what I can do in this moment now is ensure a smooth transition of power to the next mayor, who, as you rightly say, is going to be a woman of color. And it is also true that they will have to pick up that mantle and ensure that this city works for everyone, that this city, that is, it's not leaving anyone behind. And so that will be true of any mayor who sits in this office. And so I am very proud of what I've been able to do as the first woman mayor, as the first black mayor for our city, to move Boston forward, to make sure we were dealing with racial justice issues, racial equity issues. And it is certainly my hope that the next mayor will do the same.
Let's talk about that transition a little bit. It's not, you know, like with the presidential election, where there's an election in the beginning of November and then you've got till January, right? The swearing in will be sometime in November. Swearing in, it's 10 days to 2 weeks after the election is certified. How do you plan for and prepare for that transition in a way that minimizes sort of bumps and bruises both for the next mayor, but also for the policies you've been working to put in place over the last 6 months?
Yeah, well, we start now. And so I am in communication with both Councilor Wu and Councilor Asabi George, and certainly wish them well over the next few weeks. But we start those conversations now, and you know, I've already directed my cabinet to begin that process, and so we will start this work now in terms of just laying out some of the basics. Once there is someone who emerges from November 2nd, we'll go deeper into a transition process, but we're going to start right now. We're not going to wait until, you know, they come and I leave. We're going to start that process right now.
One more thing on that, and then we'll move on. You know, voting data analyzed by WBUR showed that in the preliminary, you drew strong support in majority-minority precincts in the heart of the city, Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan, Hyde Park. In fact, you drew far more support than the other candidates in precincts that are less than 20% white. There are two candidates you've worked with, you've known for a long time. You've worked side by side. What advice would you give them? What messages do they need to bring forward? How do they need to show up for the voters who supported you to earn their trust in the general?
Well, again, I'm gonna leave all of this analysis for the pundits. I'm going to stay focused on the people of Boston. As I said, you know, it is incumbent upon any mayor to make sure that they are addressing racial equity, racial justice issues. So I don't know that I'll add more to what I've already said, other than, you know, my commitment is ensuring a smooth transition. It's what the people of Boston need. We are still in the midst of a global pandemic. We are still in the midst of a housing crisis. There are a number of challenges facing our city. And I want the next mayor to be ready to lead on day one. And to, again, be able to prioritize the people of Boston, particularly those who have been left out historically. This city is a great city, and it's a city that must and should work for every single resident in every single neighborhood.
Yeah, I hear you. And I want to be clear, I'm not trying to be cute with this. I just am so aware that you are in a moment where you are connected to the residents of Boston in a way that's unlike almost anyone else. And over 6 months, you've learned what the residents of Boston need to hear. So let me put it to you this way. Today, from you as the mayor, what do residents of Boston most need to hear from you right now?
Well, they need leadership who continues to prioritize the people. We are in the midst of a pandemic. We are going into flu season during this pandemic with college kids back, with students in our schools. We still have a housing crisis. We still have a number of challenges facing our city. And it is important that we get beyond politics and ensure that we are coming together as a city to deal with very tough issues that have been in the making for years and decades. Many of the things, as I've said a number of times, that COVID has illuminated have been here under the surface the whole time. And so as we continue to fight COVID-19 in terms of cases and slowing the spread, we've also have to address the systemic inequities that have been there all along. And so it is very important that we come together to do that work. That isn't the work that one person does by themselves. That is the work that we as a city have to do together. And so I am very proud of the work that I've been able to do over the last 6 months and will continue to do over the next 2 months to continue to move Boston forward, to make sure that there is a foundation from which to build, and to make sure that I am available for the next mayor to, again, make sure that the people of our city in every single neighborhood all across Boston are well served.
Let's take a call. Let's take one from Abdi in East Boston. Abdi, you are on with Mayor Kim Janey.
Thank you, Atisiana, longtime listener, first-time caller. Good afternoon, and good afternoon to the mayor as well. Thank you for your service and your historic run. I was just curious, you have done a really good work so far, and I was curious if our city, under your tenure, will announce Indigenous Peoples Day as a city holiday. I think we are the last city. Our neighbor cities, Cambridge, Somerville, and Newton have done it, and I was curious if you will make a historic announcement for this coming holiday.
Thank you, Abdi. That is a great question, and that is something that my team and I are working on. I really appreciate you lifting that up, and I think very timely, especially given the conversation.
So are you working towards doing that before you're done in the mayor's office?
Yes.
Let's take one more call from Mary in Southend. Mary, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Mayor Janey, for your service and City Council. I am a long-term resident of the South End. My children went school busing at the same time that you did. And we knew your father very well at the Bancroft School, and everybody adored him, as you know.
Thank you, Mary.
We do appreciate what you're doing, and I like your ideas tremendously. What I'm calling about is something that we in the South End are going through, but we're not the only neighborhood in the city. It's happening to South Boston. I suspect it's happening in Roxbury and Roslindale and everywhere. As the real estate prices skyrocket, the new people coming in with a great deal of money to build, to buy houses and renovate them, the real estate taxes go up. So those of us who bought into the South End, and I think you may have been living there when we bought in the South End, and we chose the South End because of...
So, Mary, I am so sorry to interrupt you, and I don't mean to disrespect you, but the mayor has limited remaining time with us, and I want to make sure she can address the issue of real estate taxes. So let me allow the mayor to respond.
Mary, it's so good to hear from you. I'm not sure exactly what your question was. I assume it has to do with the property values going up and therefore real estate taxes going up.
Yes.
And, you know, this is a huge issue. And it's a huge issue not just for the individual taxpayer. It's an issue for our city as a whole because so much of our city's budget is dependent upon real estate taxes. In fact, 3/4 of our budget is on real estate tax. And so we have to diversify our revenue stream. This, again, is going to fall to so few people are paying into the real estate tax. So few homeowners are here, and yet... our budget is largely dependent upon it. And so we do have to address this moving forward in a way that diversifies our revenue stream. I do have a piece of legislation right now that is currently at the State House that would help generate millions of dollars that could then be invested in affordable housing. And this is through a transfer fee that would take a small percentage of from the buyer and the seller for properties that sell on the high end, so that we're protecting small landlords and dealing with those who are utilizing the housing market as some sort of speculative market for their own individual gain. And so the hope is that we can get that passed to help diversify our revenue stream and support housing in the city that meets the needs of residents here in Boston.
And Mary,
and
again,
I do appreciate call Mary, and especially the reference to my dad. So thank you so much.
That was heartening. And again, Mary, sorry to cut you off, but we are up against the mayor's next appointment. And with that in mind, Boston Acting Mayor Kim Gini, I want to thank you for joining us. And I hope you will come back one more time. Do one more Monday
Absolutely.
With us.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure. I certainly appreciate you and all of your listeners. Thank you so much.